Hey, hello, folks. Welcome to Taboo Topic. I am your host, Ken Drew, for your Hot Seat Edition on Wednesdays, where I take one subject, opinion, sentiment, or story, and put it on blast and put it on the hot seat, as the name suggests. And this week, well, we're going to talk about the implications, the political implications of the Hunger Games. That's right. We're going to go take a little bit different direction in this episode. I'm going to use in the Hunger Games series, the book itself anyway, to talk about and make parallels to today's society. But as usual, before we get into it, I have some thoughts I need to share aloud. So before we get going any further, stay tuned. We'll be back after this short break. And now to sponsor myself, me, that's right, I have absolutely no money to be made off this, just getting the word out. Now, if you've ever wondered where I get my Thinking Out Loud monologues from, well, I'm glad you asked, because they're just my articles from my Substack newsletters. Just type in the URL at kenjin296.substack.com, I repeat, kenjin296.substack.com, spell the word engine, put the letter K in front of the word engine, then you get Kenjin, one word, 296.substack.com. Then you can follow me on Instagram, Getter, TikTok, and soon, Truth Social at Kenjin_Express. I repeat, Kenjin_Express. Then last but not least, you can follow me on Facebook. Type in Taboo Topic in the search bar. Look for the logo that says Honesty Equals Understanding. There's two episodes a week. I have a Hot Seat Edition where I scrutinize an opinion or story, popular or unpopular. Do my research so to provoke thought. Remember, that also comes with an article on Substack, so don't forget about that, on Wednesdays. Then on Friday, we go over current events, where I pick 2 to 4 stories I found interesting, and hopefully you do as well. Possibly more if I have a guest, then there's a good conversation, so we can cover as many bases as possible, so you, the audience, have less holes to fill in understanding the truth. That's 2 episodes a week, guaranteed, which you can listen to this show on any platform, from Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, and more. So stay up to date and tune in. Don't forget to leave a review either. If it's less than a 5-star, let me know so I can better serve you. Here on this show, we dare to think out loud and question the narrative. Free speech triumphs your safe space, because in order for us to think, we have to risk being offensive. If we want to have true peace in our society, we have to be able to be honest with each other. If we can be honest with each other, then we'll have a true understanding that will lead to real peace. Amen? All right, let's get back to the show. Hello there, folks. This is your host, Ken Drew. And as usual, I have some thoughts I need to share out loud with you. You may be wondering what inspired me to write this. Well, frankly, it was the fact that I had to write an essay about this. Not necessarily the Hunger Games itself, but just the idea anyway. And we had to write a book. We had to write a book report, more or less. And after I wrote the book, I figured, you know what? Why not make an episode about this? Why not take a different direction with this? So The Hunger Games was written by Suzanne Collins in 2008, and it was a cultural phenomenon that captured the imagination of the West. Yet, was this book a criticism of communism or capitalism? And what lessons can be learned from it and applied in today's setting? Now, the book is set in a dystopian future where North America and democracy ceased to exist under a dictatorship in a nation called Panem. There is a civil war that takes place between the working class and the 13 districts and the capital. The war results in defeat for the districts, leading to a treaty with barbaric conditions, and District 13 being demolished out of existence. The conditions include having a male and female tribute between the ages of 12 to 18, randomly selected or volunteered from each of the 12 remaining districts to enter an arena in a Roman-style gladiator event in battle to the death until one remains. This is to remind the working class in the remaining 12 districts that the state is the ultimate provider of their needs and truth, and that it is superior to the people. The districts also have their specific functions economically with which the capital has tasked them. District 1, gemstones and jewelry. District 2, architecture and the main military base. District 3, electronics. District 4, fishing. District 5, main provider. You get the idea. But the more useful the economies are for this capital, the higher the favorability of the district. Thus, districts 1 through 4 were the wealthiest and districts 11 and 12 being the poorest. But what kind of system does this resemble, though? Believe it or not, there are people out there that use this and think this is a knock on capitalism. Capitalism, we have to understand first and foremost, before we actually get into whether or not this is a knock on communism or capitalism, we have to understand the two systems first. So let's take a look at capitalism. Capitalism, or a market economy, is defined as an economic system in which private individuals and businesses own capital goods. The production of goods and services is based on supply and demand in the general market. In its purest form, this is laissez-faire, where there are no restrictions on individuals as to how to utilize their resources and investments. The success of the economy is based on the merit of the people's products, companies, and ideas. Free will is king. In contrast, a communist state is a command economy where the state controls all the means of production, the prices, and the industries. This state determines the fate of the people's economic status, and thus the individual's free will is severely diminished. Their ability to climb up the economic ladder is dependent upon the state, rather than personal effort. Meritocracy is dead. By economic standards, author Suzanne Collins' dystopia is in alignment with communism. However, sometimes economic freedom doesn't equate to political freedom. In a capitalistic society, one would assume free speech flourishes, but one can point to China as an example of how in their markets open, yet there is no political freedom. Free speech doesn't exist. That said, when people talk about capitalism, the main conversation is purely materialistic. Communism doesn't stop with the economy. From the Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx is also a proponent of state-controlled speech. When a government is limiting the individual's ability to speak freely on their thoughts about the current state of the system, then political freedom dissipates. As the story plays out, Katniss, the main character, and a young girl named Rue from another district team up. While the two get to know each other, Katniss begins to wonder if the Capitol is broadcasting their conversation, because in their world, the 12 districts do not talk to each other. She states, "It's interesting to hear about her life. We have so little communication with anyone else outside our district. In fact, I wonder if the game makers are blocking out our conversation, because even though the information seems harmless, they don't want people in different districts to know about one another." It is also hinted that due to this lack of communication, there are misconceptions about the other districts. Katniss realizes that District 11, where Rue is from, is limited in the amount of food they can keep for themselves, despite their economy being agriculture. She states, "I thought in District 11 you'd have a bit more to eat than us. You know, since you grow the food," I say. Rue's eyes widen. Oh no, we're not allowed to eat the crops. They arrest you or something?" I ask. "Nah, they whip you and make everyone else watch," says Rue. "The mayor is very strict about it. This lack of communication between the districts is the result of the Capitol suppressing speech throughout Penham." Another allusion is at the beginning of the book, when Katniss hints they have to be careful what they say about their system, as she processes her best friend Gale's rants. "His rage seems pointless to me, although I'll never say so. It's not that I don't agree with him, I do. But what good is it to yell about the Capitol in the middle of the woods? It doesn't change anything. It doesn't make things fair. It doesn't fill our stomachs. In fact, it scares off the nearby game. I let him yell, though. Better he does it in the woods than the district." When there is suppression of speech, it often leads to misconceptions about one's neighbors and what the truth is, thus propaganda. This combined is in alignment with communism. Who holds dominion over the individual is another factor to consider. In a capitalist system, it is the individual who controls their fate, including what kind of family they want. To expand on this, the individual holds dominion over the fate of their children. In a communist worldview, this is unacceptable. The communists want to do away with private property and educate children on a communal basis, and in this way, remove the basis of marriage up to now, the dependence of the wife and the husband, and of the children on their parents resulting from private property. The capital in Panem has dominion over the fate of the children. Their system requires parents to give their children into their custody for a reaping every year to acquire the two tributes from the districts, from age 12 until the very last day of their 18th year of existence on earth. This creates a resentment for the characters, such as Gale with his rant against the capital, and PETA, who stated the night before the games that he wanted to show the capital they didn't own him. Eventually, Katniss, the fictional character, shares this similar sentiment after the death of Rue. I want to do something right here, right now, to shame them, to make them accountable, to show that the capital, that they, whatever they do or force us to do, that there is a part of every tribute they can't own. That Rue was more than a piece in their games, and so am I. This ownership of children's lives is once again in alignment with communism. The overwhelming evidence concludes that this book is denouncing the communist system of Panem. While there are different versions of communism or interpretations of Karl Marx's ideology, this fictional world centers on this paradigm. There has been a push from the Western systems to increase their power over the people. There is an agenda to replace our system called the Great Reset that gives governments dominion over every facet of society. The book and series Susan Collins wrote in the late 2000s, early 2010s, was a foreshadowing of what America could be if people lost sight of the humanity everyone possesses. A godless society that gives humans a pedestal over God. Unlike God, humanity is prone to corruption. What happens if political powers don't have anyone that hold themselves accountable? Political powers are the arbitrary of truth. One could justify having barbaric games for children to forcibly play to the death. The scenario of this society becoming a reality is unclear, given that nobody has a crystal ball. Yet, when political leaders have nobody to respond to, the depraved imagination will manifest itself into malevolence. It's just a matter of how. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this short break. And now to take a short break from the show to keep my promise and bring an awareness to the situation in Afghanistan, where we have about 9,000 American citizens who were left behind as a result of the disastrous withdrawal efforts by the Biden administration last year. The elite globalist leaders, the media, and big tech may have forgotten about them and would rather focus on other manners, but the reality is we have Americans who are in harm's way because nobody wants to hold our leaders accountable. It's just too inconvenient for them. So, this is a special shout out to the families and friends who have someone they know and love stuck in that country, and also to the very ones who are stuck there. You are not forgotten, and I'll keep mentioning you until there is a report, there is a concentrated effort to bring you home, and every single one of you comes back to American soil. Please. If you fall into one of these categories, either you're the family friend that knows someone that's there and you want to let me know how we can better help you out, please reach out. Or if you're that person that just so happens to be stuck there and you happen to be listening to this episode, please reach out to me. You can reach out to me through my personal account on Instagram at Kenjin296. I repeat, Kenjin296. Spell the word engine, put the letter K in front of the word engine, then you get Kenjin, one word, 296. Please, you're not forgotten. To my audience out there, don't forget to pray. Let's pray for their safety and their return home. And now, back to the show. Welcome. Hello there. I am your host, Ken Drew, for your Hot Seat Edition. That was your Thinking Out Loud monologue for the week, and I gotta ask you as usual, What were your thoughts on the monologue? Did you agree with it? Disagree with it? Can you see the parallels with communism and the direction that Susan Collins was taking the book in? The worldview? Now, you may be wondering what inspired me to do this. Well, frankly, I actually already wrote this in an essay. I think I vaguely touched on it in the intro before we went into my Thinking Out Loud monologue. This is something I was already thinking and already wrote on it recently for a class. This is actually being reviewed for a grade right now. But the work I put in, I was impressed with myself. I was able to come up with the conclusion and the connect the dots in the way that was managed to. So a little humble brag, a little bit of bragging myself for myself. I don't do it often, so give me a break. Cut me some slack on this one. But I wanted to go ahead and go this route for a change, for a hot seat, because for some people, whatever is being presented to them as far as an argument being made or trying to persuade someone, sometimes for some people, a lot of people even actually, they won't make the connection unless you tell a story. Once you tell a story, then they can make connections to the real world, and thus it's easy for them to follow you, what you have to say. And when you think about Jesus and his time on earth, a lot of the parables he gave, he was given stories. He was storytelling for a lot of his sermons. And part of that storytelling allowed the audience, the listener, the person, the people that were there to get a visual of what Jesus was talking about. And because of those stories, people were able to make the connections that Jesus was wanting the people in that particular time and place to hear. So I went ahead and went this direction for a change. I thought it'd be really interesting, and I thought it'd be a little fun to get into a little bit. Because this is something that I think there's some parallels that we can make today to that fictional story. And let's go ahead and just start off with the title, Hunger Games. The Hunger Games. Now this book review, more or less, was just a book review on one book of the series. So I only focused on The Hunger Games, that very first book where we get introduced to a character like Katniss, Gale, Peeta. And for those who have never read the book, I recommend reading the book. I read it when I was in high school and don't really remember much. As a matter of fact, before I wrote the essay, I think I may have skimmed over the book itself. I went online, thanks to the internet. We have PDF files, PDF versions of this, so I don't have to actually buy a physical copy or go to a library or even rent it online from like Kindle, Amazon Firebook thingy, whatever you want to call it. I didn't have to do any of that, so that's what I did. I mainly watched the films, but even through the films, they did a relatively good job of adapting it from the story, from the book. And obviously, and I think there's some aspects the films actually do a better job portraying than the book. I think personally, now as I'm older, I think I personally respect and enjoy more the visual aspect. If I could get a visual of what's going on, I have a better way to connect the dots personally than I would audio. And for some people listening to this right now, it probably would help you if you could actually see what I'm talking about. But the best I can do is give you use that imagination of yours for this episode. All right, use that imagination. So for the title, Hunger Games itself. One thing we have to understand that I think is very interesting, as I came to the conclusion that, yes, this book is completely knocking on Marxism, communism. One thing is very true in this pattern is that in a lot of Marxist societies and communist societies, whatever, which let me go ahead, as I stated in the article or monologue, is that yes, people are going to have different interpretations of Marxism, such as Adolf Hitler. Karl Marx, that was his foundation, but he had different interpretation of his writings and his philosophy. And thus, even though Hitler wasn't a communist, he was a fascist, it was still a form of Marxism, just like Joseph Stalin's. His was an actual, as close to communism, hands down, verbatim, as you can get. But despite that, every Marxist regime, people tend to starve in a lot of these regimes. And I thought it was interesting that Susan Collins chose The Hunger Games for the title of her first book of the series, because it fits perfectly to the pattern we see in Marxist societies when they instill it on a universal scale in their country. The only people who tend to not starve are those the government deems worthy of not impoverishing, worthy of getting that extra money, that social credit system that we see in China, which if you notice in China anyway, you don't see poor people in the big cities. At least when it comes to the media coverage, they're going to make sure people only see that part of China. They're not going to go westward where all the rural and poor people are at in China, and the ones that are impoverished and the ones that have no political freedom. Well, I actually take it back. They just don't have the economic freedom. All of China has no political freedom. They don't have freedom of speech like we do here in America, which, thanks to Elon Musk, I now have a Twitter account. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, go ahead and type in Kenjin Express, at Kenjin Express. That's all there is. No underscore this time. But I do have a Twitter account. But the reason why I say that is because I think when it comes to free speech, people tend to assume that if the markets are open, that somehow it must mean there's political freedom as well. Well, not necessarily true. As despite the fact that even the wealthiest districts had that freedom economically per se, which they didn't really have that much economic freedom, is more like that social credit. And it's like I said a moment ago, like for each of the districts, whatever, the more useful the capital found them, the more money they made as a district. So District 12, for example, they just exist for a quota. That's it. And so that's why you see a lot of poor people there, a lot of people impoverished, and why you'll, in the story, it talks about Katniss, the main character, going days without eating, and the most she's ate were from the leaves and were from the leaves outside that they stewed the other day for soup, something like that. So it doesn't necessarily equate to economic freedom either. There's no economic freedom, but the more useful you are, the more money you'll make. And so you're still within the confines of the government. But just because they make more money and because they are viewed more favorable with the government, the state, does not necessarily mean they have free speech. As a matter of fact, anyone who speaks out against the state in the Hunger Games series, that world, it is not uncommon for the capital to cut their tongue out, for example, as a form of punishment for speaking out against the capital. And in the capital, they tried everything they could to kill Katniss, the main character, after the games. And even during the games, when she was doing acts of civil disobedience, the Capitol wanted to go ahead and basically, well, I'm not going to finish that sentence, but you get the idea. They want to kill her. But to kind of go back to the title, I know I kept drifting for a little bit, but let's go back to the title for a moment, and that in the sense that every Marxist regime, there tends to be a lot of hunger because it doesn't work. Because a lot of times when the state is in control of everything, there's only so much money to go around that eventually they're going to have the people are going to run out of money because the state, there's only so much the state can squeeze out of people that eventually they're not going to have enough money to provide the basic necessities for their people. And so a lot of times people end up being impoverished. And because the people are basically in shackles in the sense they cannot move up the economic ladder, they don't have that freedom to go ahead and open up, come up with an idea, become an entrepreneur per se, and move up the economic ladder because they're at the will of the government, it exacerbates the impoverishment that's occurring in these Marxist regimes. So I thought that was really interesting. And I think that's a parallel to the direction that we're seeing right now with this Great Reset, that they want to install Marxism on a global scale, this one government rule across the globe, adopting China's system of Marxism, communism. But as I stated, they're not going to go ahead and tell you the truth about the realities of China's communism. They're not going to tell you what happened beyond those big cities or what they're willing to show you on TV and or screen. There are people that are in poverty in China today. There are people in poverty in Cuba. There are people in poverty in Nazi Germany. There are people in poverty in the Soviet Union. And so what I see the situation right now here in the United States, where we have food manufacturing companies being burnt across the nation. What does that say about us? If the Biden administration, I'm just going to call it out for how I see it. This is speculation. I don't know if it's true or not. I don't have concrete evidence to back what I'm saying. But the Biden administration is on board with the Great Reset. They're on board with this Marxist takeover of America. And so for this reset to occur, they have to create crisis. You can't say there's a global food, you can't say there's going to be a famine or food supply chain crisis if you have the resources available to you, unless you deliberately destroy the resources that allow us to be fed and put food on the table. And yes, that's really happening across America right now. Look it up. That's a fact. I can tell you that. I don't know as far as the reasoning, and I can't tell you if it's coincidental or on purpose, but you have to admit the timing of it seems oddly too timely, well-timed to be coincidental. In time to talk about a food crisis or a food shortage in America. Brace yourselves, America. Everyone has to make a sacrifice. And that's coming from the state. And ironically enough, in the movie or in the book, the novel of Susan Collins, the Capitol makes that same rhetoric of it's your sacrifice that we need. You need to sacrifice for the sake of the state. The state is God. And that's something that the series, the books don't really cover. They don't really touch the spiritual aspect. But I'm going to make that connection here. Because in order for this society, in a healthy society, morally speaking, they will not get to this level of depravity if they were healthy. Morally speaking. And the only way they could get to that level of depravity is either someone took something from the Bible or any of the big three religions I consider, Muslim, Islam, Judaism, Christianity, the big three, and they take what they like and twist it into their own corrupt version of God to serve themselves and to justify their actions as a government. Unless that's the case, the only reason why they can reach that level of depravity is if they completely abandon God. And even if you've twisted God into your own false idol, you still abandon the God of the Bible. And yes, I'm going to say right here on the show, that the Christian Bible is the one true God. I'm unapologetic about it. I think Jesus is the only way, the truth, and the life. I think he's the only person, the standard for what a good person is. And that's the benefit of society having the belief there's a God that holds everyone accountable on a universal standard. When we abandon that belief, we get into this chaos of moral relativism, where humanity, us humans, the individuals, we place ourselves on a pedestal of righteousness. And when we place ourselves on a pedestal of righteousness, as I mentioned and alluded to in the article, that will tend to shift based on the current sentiments of the time. So let's say for one period of time, we all agree that, murder after birth, killing a child after birth is morally wrong. But then you have a bill like California is proposing where it allows the killing of a child up to almost a year after the birth of the month after their birth. When humanity is in charge, the tide's morality will shift the direction of the moral compass that you as the individual have placed. And even then, if there is no God that's holding society accountable in a universe, on a universal basis, then at that point, if the person doesn't believe there's a God anyway that has that universal standard, or you just don't believe in universal moral absolutes at all, then at that point, how can you sit there and say, this person's good, this person's bad, this is a morally righteous person, this is an unrighteous person? It's too much confusion. It gets confusing. It creates discombobulation at that point. Because there's not one set of rules we can all look to, this set of neutral rules we can look up to and say, oh, okay. So that's how us humans, that's how we ought to be behaving and treating each other. Okay, I get it now. In a world like the Hunger Games, a healthy society doesn't get to that point unless you abandon God. Now, I'm not saying, and I'm on this show, on today's episode, stating that America and the West, we're heading to a scenario similar to the Hunger Games, the one that Susan Collins brings up. I'm not saying that. But I am saying is the seeds, the foundation that created the world in the Hunger Games can lead to a scenario like the Hunger Games. And it's very problematic. It's dangerous. Especially when the state has unlimited power, no one holding them accountable. If there's no free speech, no one can hold the government accountable at that point. You think the government's going to hold themselves accountable? You may need a reality check if you think they can hold themselves accountable, especially if you're a listener right now that's in that ball field that thinks that despite the corruption of our government, we need to give them more power to fix the corruption. When it's the reality that given that much power has created that corruption. Because think about it, the bigger the government is and the less people they have to answer to, the more likely the seeds of corruption will grow and mend itself into something malevolent. Do you see the problem here? And when the state is in that depraved state of mind with their imagination, who's to stop them from writing a law or passing a law that does force children to combat to the death from ages 12 to 18? Who is to hold the state accountable from stripping parents away their rights to raise their children and protect them? As in the same manner with the Hunger Games, which another parallel we can make. There's many people on the left that are upset with parents fighting back. Parents wanting to take control of their kids' lives again, their education, what they consume. Not only from an educational standpoint, from schools, but also from entertainment. Disney. Parents are not taking that crap anymore. But in this administration anyway, we have an administration that called those parents domestic terrorists. The same manner probably, if the parents in the Hunger Games book, the novel, the series, decided to withhold their children from participating in the games. The capital in that movie or in that book, that world, would deem them traitors. Essentially, the Biden administration is calling the parents traitors for speaking out against what's being produced in a Western sphere, in the Western sphere right now. Whereas through the education system, critical race theories, or the activism with LGBTQ issues. And it's not, like I said before in a few episodes ago, has nothing to do with the fact that these students are being strictly taught critical race theory verbatim out of a textbook but the schools are applying principles of critical race theory that are making children, especially white kids in particular, feel a certain way about their skin color. Making white children feel guilty for sins they had never committed. And then for children of color, minority children, people in the minority community, their children, teaching them they're a victim and inferior to white people, which will create resentment on that side towards white people, and they'll create resentment on white people towards people of minority, people of color, minority communities as a result. And that's the thing that Marxism needs. It needs that division that separates the classes. And ironically enough, when you make people realize and dehumanize people, you can justify anything. And the only way you can justify and keep this perception, this illusion, this propaganda that certain groups are a certain way is if you control the speech. Which, again, I alluded to and the book alludes to in The Hunger Games when it comes to the Capitol suppressing any speech in the districts among each other. Because if they talk to each other, the Capitol understands that once the word starts spreading that they treat that everyone, no one, the odds are never in their favor in that world and that they all get treated like garbage to in their own form. Then at that point, it collapses the system because if the people unite against the government is vulnerable. That's when the government is most vulnerable, is when the people actually fight back and universally, not even universe, but a predominant faction of the population decides to unite against the state. The state at that point has no power because who's going to enforce the rules and the laws they have in place? If their own people aren't willing to enforce the rules they deem to be inappropriate and unfair and unjust anyway, it's a fragile system at that point. Who's to stop them? Who's going to enforce anyone at that point? So another connection, another parallel we can make in today's society to the Hunger Games. And as I've stated before, this is not me coming on the show stating the next 10 years we're going to experience the first Hunger Games competition. But the seeds, the foundation of this book that presents the parallels, the mindset, we can end up in a similar scenario. And it starts with the false worship of idols. Idolization. We live in a country. It's a pagan nation at this point. We're not a Christian nation by any means. We're a pagan nation where we worship little different things. We worship our sports board. We put more time into politics than into our faith. Or we let the politics decide what faith we're going to practice. We decide our politics to affect how we view the world. There's a reason, all right? There's a reason why the Christian Bible, God states, do not worship anyone else but me. There's a reason why that's the first commandment. Because everything else is a domino effect. If you worship something else, you're prone to making all these other sins and mistakes. This is why Marxism is a dangerous paradigm. It's a dangerous worldview. And we need to heap the lessons from books such as the Hunger Games series and the Hunger Games by itself. It's the reason why we need to actually take heart the lessons from this book. So we don't make and we don't end up in the same world. And I understand the reason why so many people find Marxism appealing is because the flaws of capitalism and the flaws of capitalism, which is a double-edged sword, it's a blessing and a curse, is free will. Capitalism is only as good as people's moral compass. And this is what Charles Dickens and Karl Marx actually touched on. They both agree on the problems of the times they were writing with their economies and capitalism. But Charles Dickens' approach with the Christmas story was a spiritual sense. and that you cannot use a system to fix humanity's flaws and greediness and selfishness. There has to be a higher ground, a higher person to look up to that will fix the that greediness, that selfishness that can bring with capitalism. They can only be fixed inward from the individual first. You cannot legislate morality. Whereas Karl Marx seems to suggest, in order to fix the problem, the state has to fix the problem. We have to legislate morality. Two people seeing the same issues of capitalism at the time, different solutions. And if you noticed in the book, at the end, it was an internal decision that made Katniss realize she needed to defy the capital, which she humanized Rue, one of the side characters of the book. She humanized it because she had an inward spiritual moment. This consciousness awakened in her. This consciousness is something that we all have, God-given. We all have it. It's just a matter of what will break the straw in the camel's back for you. For me, it was getting involved with the church, and I hope you get involved with the church, or at least someone from the church comes to you and brings the gospel. That's my hope. But the point I'm making with that, though, is that to an extent, that moment or those small, subtle moments in that whole series, that was Susan Collins alluding the solution to tyranny, the solution to the greediness and corruption of society starts from the heart, starts inward. Hope. And that is a dangerous thing for a Marxist regime. Without that hope, are we going into, or are we heading into a Hunger Games scenario? I hope not. And I actually have more reasons to cheer for what I'm seeing today than I did even a week ago. Elon Musk buying out Twitter, Netflix getting a taste of their own medicine, losing over 200,000 subscribers, Disney taking a hit, losing their special privileges status here in Florida, which that's a different story by itself, but I digress. There's a lot to cheer about. A lot of people's consciousness are being awakened right now. I thank God. God's hand is in all of this right now. I'm hopeful. And I hope you do too. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to Taboo Topic. I am your host, Kendrew. Thanks for tuning into today's show. I hope you enjoyed. I hope it was thought-provoking. I know it's been a minute since I've done a hot tea edition, so I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for taking your time of the day to listen to what I have to say and to my rants. Until the weekend review, which I'm bringing in a guest from Between the Liars, Ryan, you all know him at this point. So it's going to be a good one. We're going to talk about current events as usual, so be sure to tune in for that. And until then, everyone, y'all have a blessed Wednesday.